You know, I think of those words and I think, what happens if they really become our story, our lives, our reality? I'll tell you what I think happens from God's perspective. I think he smiles real big. I don't even need that today there, amigo. Should have caught you earlier. I don't need that. I don't have water. So I'm just going to cash it. Thanks, buddy. You know, you wonder what God thinks when he's hoping for our allegiance, when he's wanting something that it's clear in the Bible he does not push upon anyone. But when he finally gets it, when we finally surrender to him, what's the look on his face when that happens? It's got to be huge. I want to give you an assignment that's totally, maybe there's a connection God will make clear in your mind later, but Nehemiah 9, if you want to write a note down, look that up sometime today before you go to sleep tonight. And you will read a story there that's a profound sort of chronology of God's people and the incredible patience of God in waiting them out, basically. And that God uses any kind of means and measure to bring people, his people in Nehemiah's story, to a place where they say, okay, God, I'll go with you. I'll walk with you. So just a thought. Maybe that'll connect a little bit later in some of what I wanted to share with you this morning. Summertime is a great time for me. It takes me back to, I don't know, happy times. It takes me back to sweeter times. I remember as a young person spending my summers in shorts and swim trunks and sandals or barefoot. We lived in warmer country than, and our summers were longer. So kind of the challenge was, how long are we going to stay in shorts and cutoffs and, you know, and swimsuits and barefoot? And sometimes that went into the fall, and I love, one of my highlights of summer is summer fruit. You just love it. I mean, you just can't get enough. What's your favorite summer fruit, by the way? Cherries. Berries? Any particular herb?
Blueberries, strawberries.
Right, he's a berry man. Okay, others? Peaches. Nectarines. Plums. Watermelon. Cantaloupe. How many put, is it salt on your cantaloupe or watermelon? Raise your hand. Okay, would you please move to this side of the room at this time? That is a weird practice. I watch people do it. I've even tasted it, and it did not change my life. So, but some do it, and it's really neat. No one's mentioned the ultimate summertime fruit, by the way.
Bacon.
Bacon. That's good. That's good. I'll give you a hint. It's a fruit that we picked a lot of in Southern Cal growing up.
Avocado.
Avocado? Is that a fruit? Peaches? No. Not oranges? Not grapefruit? I'm on cholesterol medicine. That would kill me. Okay, what? Figs. What? You're all, ugh. Let's pray for Pastor Steve, you know. Let me tell you about figs, though. My grandmother, who grandparents lived in Montebello, and they had a fig tree in the backyard, and a great treat for us was the announcement, hey, kids, go out and climb the fig tree and pick a bowl full of figs and bring them back, and we did, and we came back with figs, and she would pour cream and sugar on them, and we would just devour this bowl of figs. And I don't know if you've ever picked figs or been in a fig tree, but it redefines sticky. It is this fig juice, or I think it's called blood. That's kind of gross, but it's white, and it's all over you, and it's sticky, sticky, sticky. But boy, is it a treat! And I've been a Fig Newton fan ever since, because I don't have a fig tree, so I have to eat fig cookies. But you get the idea. Now, here's my question. We're having fun right now, even, talking about summertime. What I want to ask you, and what I want to know, is what happens, why is it that over time, as we grow up, that we lose our ability to laugh freely and spontaneously at life? What is it about looking back that's easy to remember funny moments and enjoyable times? But somehow along the way, as I make my way to adulthood, my look gets serious. Okay, responsibilities. I'm really wanting your feedback too, by the way. It's not rhetorical, so thank you. Responsibilities. What are some of the other things that make it, you know, almost illegal for adults to get playful and nutty? I'm sorry? Public drunkenness. Yeah, it takes us a whole nother direction, doesn't it? It's yeah. What are some things that, you know, you go, okay, what is it about? If you're an adult here today, why is it that you love watching your children run through the slip and slide and the you know?
No worries.
Embarrassing. We'll come back to your comment. It's embarrassing. Have you been embarrassed as an adult for being silly?
Yeah.
And maybe your parents tell you, come on, what is it? There you go, grow up. All right? I'm sorry?
Broken hip.
A broken hip. Hold on, that's in my notes here, I think, someplace. Broken hip. Let's call it the charm of childhood, okay? You look at children and there seems to be a charm about childhood. And it is, coming back to your statement, it is to enjoy, I think, life without worry. Without worry. In fact, I made a list of things. Think about it. Kids don't stress over, will you help me?
Money.
I knew that would be the top of our list, by the way. Money.
Safety.
Table manners.
Traffic.
I'm sorry?
Traffic.
Job. Irritation. Jobs.
Politics.
I'm sorry? I knew somebody would say health, too. That's got to be on a lot of our minds. How many of you are on some kind of medication? Hey? So am I, by the way. You know? Okay, so there was one more?
Schedules,
okay? That's kind of most of what I had on my list. Future plans?
Responsibilities.
I don't have them. Right now, some parents are starting to think, okay, let's see, it's getting close to... What are we thinking as parents? What comes up in a month? And 4 days and 3 hours and... School. And parents start thinking through, I got to get the back-to-school supplies, I got to find the school lists at Target or wherever you go, and I got to get the school clothes, and see, it all starts. And what child right now is going, okay, what am I going to wear day one at school? I can't, oh, geez, it's a month away. No, they're picking figs out of the fig tree, right? They're having a great time. I want to come back to the no worries thing. Swahili language has a label for it. And I remember this, this is an actual expression, but I remember it from Lion King, the Disney movie. You want to help me with it? On the count of three. One, two, three. Hakuna Matata. All right, you got to say it like you mean. Hakuna Matata. Right? All right, I'm getting a little ridiculous here. But perhaps you're honestly a person this morning who says, you know what, I like that. It literally means there are no worries. Hakuna Matata. I like that. And I will get there. When?
Finish my sentence. Win what? Sorry? Okay, maybe it's that far away. But for you, if you're here this morning and you're saying, I want to live worry-free, I'll get there, Pastor, when
I retire.
I'm dead. It's a tough crowd this morning here. When I accept, okay? How about
when I get closer to God?
When I get closer to God, no worries. By the way, theologically, that is absolutely spot on. When I get baptized.
When I
realize I'm not in charge. Okay. A little more of the surrender thing. Okay, God, you're... Then the worries start to fade. When the rapture comes, that my father mentioned. Or how about at a really gutsy, kind of earthy level? I'll quit worrying when I get a better job. Or I'll quit worrying when I get past this health crisis. Or I'll go Hakuna Matata when I get married. It's a really tough crowd. Brighter circumstances. Maybe that's the deal for you, the turning point. I want to reach back into some of your comments when Jesus comes back, when I surrender. You know, those are for sure. But let me ask you this, especially on the when Jesus comes back comment. You think he wants us to wait that long to stop worrying? For a few moments this morning, midsummer, by the way, check my calendar. It's a midsummer checkup this morning. I want us to talk a bit about joy stealers. It's my belief that God wants you and me as his children to have joy in the journey, not just when we get to the destination and see Jesus face to face. Now, you may dispute my premise, but I believe that that's the case. Otherwise, how do you explain things like the second in the list of fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5 is
joy?
And how do you explain in the Old Testament, in the midst of a terrible book of the Bible, Lamentations, terrible in the sense that it profiles an extraordinary time of suffering, but right smack dab in the middle, chapter 3, what do you read? Great is thy faithfulness. Your mercies are new every morning. And there's this doxology, we call it, this praise moment, where the writer, who is Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, known to be one filled with tears, somehow found a way in God, in the midst, not someday, but in the midst of his suffering, to have joy. I think there are a lot of joy killers that, if we let them have their way, they will steal from us our ability to laugh, to enjoy life, to enjoy Jesus in this moment. When I was a little boy, I was probably 10 or so, my brother was 12, we would gather a whole group of friends and we would go to a nearby high school. And we found a shortcut that got us to the baseball field, and we were going to spend the day playing baseball. We packed picnic and all this stuff, but we were there mainly to play ball. Because we went the shortcut, it meant we came to a fence that we had to scale. We had to go over a cyclone fence that was huge. It was huge. And so what we did, we threw our equipment up over and sometimes didn't clear the fence, had to keep throwing. Finally got all the equipment into the field, into the diamond, and then we began our climb over the fence. Most of us, even though I don't like heights, I kind of just kind of overlook it and overcome it and get up and over. But there was, all of us got over, and then we look back, and there's my brother. And he's just walking along the fence like this. And you could just see him looking for a way, some other way to get over there, because he was sure he wasn't going to make it. Finally, after continuous coaxing, and you can do it, Glenn, you can do it, he began his climb. And he got up to the top of the fence, and I still remember, it's a hilarious memory for me, my brother scaling the fence, so one leg and arms on either side of the top of the fence, and he is clinging to it. And I could remember him calling down, going, "Call for help, man, call for help, I'm not going to make it," you know, and this kind of thing. And it went on and on, and we're, "Glenn, you got to get off the fence." "No, I can't make it, call for an airlift," you know, this kind of thing. And eventually, he loosened his grip. I'll finish the story in a few minutes. Paul is an apostle of Christ. And he wrote about his journey with Jesus. And I wouldn't have a real compelling point to make if you and I didn't have in our Bible 2 Corinthians 11, which chronicles, I don't need you to go there because we're going to stay at Philippians 4 in a second. But in 2 Corinthians 11, Paul tells about, remember that whole list? I was beaten, I was stoned, I was in danger, I was harassed, I was shipwrecked. Nights and days, I was naked, I was homeless, I was hurting, I was helpless. I was in a spot, my paraphrase of 2 Corinthians 11. But what doesn't make his list in 2 Corinthians 11 is a two-year sentence to a prison in Rome. And in that prison, chained to a Roman guard, here's this great apostle of God who's used to going around reaching people with the gospel, telling them about Jesus, telling them about his story and how Jesus changed his own life. And he had seen incredible results, only now he's in prison in Rome. And it was while he was in prison, he wrote a number of letters to churches that he had visited. We know them as epistles. They're known as the prison epistles, in fact. And one of them that stands out in a big way, because it has become the New Testament book of joy, is the book of Philippians. Get this now, don't forget this. Written by the Apostle Paul in prison. He was not at Disneyland. He was not on a camping trip. He wasn't, finish the sentence, where you go to have nothing but fun, worry-free living. He's in jail, a stinking jail, presumably with the key misplaced. Wondering thoughts like you would wonder, and I would wonder, will I ever get out of here? Does anybody even know I'm here? God, what's the deal? Only for Paul, it was a different deal altogether. Because he said this in Philippians 4. If you want to look on with me, it's just a few verses, the last chapter of this, just four chapter letter written by Paul in prison. He defies all the expectations you might have of someone rotting in jail, and he speaks of themes like, well, see if you can detect these themes. Verse 10 of Philippians 4. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you've been concerned, but you had no opportunity to express it or show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstance I am. I know what it's like to be in need. To not have my needs met is what he's saying, verse 12. And I know what it's like to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in poverty. Want is what New International says. And then he adds verse 13, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. So he begins in verse 10 to praise these people for renewing their concern for him. Presumably that was a financial concern. His financial needs continued to be met because God had moved in the hearts of people like these folks in Philippi, the Philippian people, and they expressed it in a practical way. They were looking for a way, and he praises them for that, for having the right heart and for coming through and caring for him in a tough spot. But that still doesn't answer, because he's not talking about, wow, I was in a spot, but your money came through and it helped me through this terrible time, and thank you, and all is good. It's not his point at all. He shares his secret, which is a secret that worked for him, and it works for people in 2011 in North America, in your life, and in my life. You know the secret? It's one word. Contentment. Contentment. And may I suggest to you, in a couple of moments, you're going to understand contentment better. Because he helps us with that. He helps us by saying, first of all, contentment is a learned character trait. It's not a spiritual gift. It is not a fruit of the Spirit. It is a learned character trait. Verse 11 makes sure we understand that. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, he says, for I have, his word now, learned to be content whatever the circumstance. He repeats himself in the very next verse. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Just like a subject that's tough, doesn't come natural for you, contentment is one of those character traits that isn't, in most of our lives, a natural, wow, I've got it in plentiful supply here, have some extra. It has to be for us, as it was for him, something that we learn in our situations, in our circumstances. It is a learned character trait. And notice, secondly, in the very next verse, that contentment is called for in all circumstances. That's why he paints the extremes he does in verse 12. I know what it is like, what it is to be in need. That's a tough spot. And I know what it's like to have plenty, meaning no needs. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry. I can hear my stomach growl. Whether living in plenty or living in want. Contentment is required, his point, in every circumstance of life. You show me somebody that has way more than they need. Okay? Big fat bank accounts, all their bills have been paid, all of the stuff of their life they own, and they need contentment. You ask anybody that has way more than they need, and they will say, I need contentment. So it's not a function of, wow, if I could get there, of course, contentment shows up. Not at all. In the same way, and it's probably easier for us to see, the person that has very little, and I'm just talking right now materially, he or she too needs to. In fact, it's required that contentment, it's called for in every circumstance of life. So what is content? Where do you get contentment? Verse 13 is Paul's answer. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Where does my contentment come from? It comes from Christ. It comes from him. 29 years ago, somebody challenged me to become content in my life because he heard a lot of winds coming out of my mouth. So I'll be content when I get married. I'll be content when I have kids. I'll be content when I become a pastor. I'll be content when I get done with seminary. I'll be content when I buy a house. I'll be content when I get a fifth wheel. No, that came later. See, my list of wins got long. This person challenged me. You know what his words were? I hope you'll memorize these same words because I memorized them. They were so impactful to me. What is contentment? It's this: realizing God has given you all you need for your present happiness. I'm going to say it again. Contentment is coming to a place of realizing that you have all you need for your present happiness. Are you content today? Or are there winds in the way? See, I think Paul's message to us is you can be okay even with stuff in the way. I think that's what the Bible is telling us here. That you can be okay. In fact, it's God's will, it's His desire that you be okay, even with stuff in the way. My challenge this morning is to avoid numerous illustration after illustration that I could give you of people who have all kinds of obstacles in the way, and yet they found their way to contentment. They learned the secret that Paul's talking about in Philippians 4. How can you go from can't to can? How do I go from I can't make it to yes, I can make it? Answer: take your eyes off your circumstances and put them on Christ. And then the next time your eyes drift down again to your circumstances, you do the same thing. And then the third time, you keep doing it. And eventually, over time, it becomes a different habit. And you are starting to cultivate this character trait because you learned to be content. When you do, I think joy comes back into the picture. I think you and I start to live with joy in the journey, which I think is where God wants us to be. I wrote these words down. It's that same verse, verse 13, but from a different translation. Listen to this. I can do everything God asks me to do with the help of Christ, who gives me the strength and power. I can do everything God asks me to do with the help of Christ, who gives me the strength and the power. That means we break the grip of, in fact, there's no more, I will get there when. Your contentment does not depend on circumstances improving. Because you start to realize God has given you and me all we need for our present happiness. Remember my brother stuck on the fence? He got unstuck that day. You know how? We kept saying, Glenn, you can make it. You can make it. You can get there, man. You can get there. You can make it. And eventually, about the third inning, he made it. He got down and he played the day away. Then, of course, faced the same challenge going back because he had to go back the same way. Why do I tell you that footnote now? Because here's the deal. You will face the challenge I face every time I try to live stuff like this. It doesn't work very well or for very long alone. I start to worry. I start to fret. I start to resurrect my wins. So I need you to say, you can make it. You will make it. You can be okay, Steve, with stuff in the way. Let's pray together. God, thank you for being interested in not only individual people like us, but thank you for being interested in what might cause you to scratch your head or roll your eyes, but you don't do disrespectful things to people you love. But you express with compassion a desire for us to surrender to you and say, God, help me to be okay because of you, even though stuff's in the way. I pray right now that you would make this a reality check in my life. And while it's quiet a moment, we're going to sing a couple of songs in a moment. Awesome in this place, mighty God. I want to give you a chance to pray. Just whisper from where you're seated, God, help me to be okay, even with stuff in the way. And you know your stuff, and so does he. Help me to be okay. And cause me to not just look at children anymore and marvel at their ability to live worry-free, but help me to live that way too. Because I know that that's your desire for my life. To be okay, even with stuff in the way. As you're enjoying time with Jesus right now, I want to invite you, as we sing the next couple of songs, if you feel like you want to visit with Jesus at a table that's been spread different points in the room, you can slip from your seat, make your way to the bread and the cup, share in communion to remind you that Jesus, he's what you need. And he's the one that can make you okay, even with other stuff in the way. And then take communion and return to your seat, and we'll wrap up our morning. Let's respond to him.